Are we going to do this thing? Or go to Fatburger?
Well, I wasn't sure if Colin needed more time to center his chi or whatever.
My chi?
Yeah.
It's I left my chi at work, so.
Then I'll just kick us off.
Please do.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the...
Maybe you should center your chi. It's spooky time. Spooky time.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Night Frights edition of the Real DMC podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marcus, and Colin. We're all here today. Marcus, Colin, how are you guys doing today?
Doing good, Dave. How are you?
Great, Dave.
Colin, I want to hear how you're really doing.
I'm wonderful.
Okay, good. Today, we're here to discuss the 2012 release, The Cabin in the Woods, directed by Drew Goddard and written by Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon.
Everybody ready?
Doesn't even show up on the GPS. Is unworthy of global positioning.
That's the whole point. Get off the grid, right?
Hello? I'm thinking this thing doesn't take credit cards.
Sign says closed.
We're looking for, what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
Not to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
The cabin in the woods.
I think I can get it to go down. Do we want to go down?
Rated R, in theaters April 13th.
Just a little bit about the film itself in terms of the background. For 2012, it actually came in at number 82 on the box office. So it made $42 million, and it maintains a 7.0 rating on the IMDb. I actually think that's a bit low based on the film itself. I think it's pretty good. We can talk about it as we go through it. There's a lot of history here in terms of the fact that this is one of the films that was completed by MGM back in 2009, and it was not released until 2012. It sat on the shelf. There was lots of back and forth, and I think it's interesting because Chris Hemsworth, who's in this film, suffered the same fate with Red Dawn, a couple of delayed films related to the MGM kind of blowing up.
Kind of worked in their favor, though, I would say, because Hemsworth became a superstar and they were able to release it after he was after Thor was released.
So just in terms of some quick opening impressions, Marcus, this is the very first time you saw it, right?
This is the first time I saw it. It was great. It was quite fun.
I have to ask you some questions because here's the thing. So I watched it last night with Jessamy, and Jessamy had never seen it. So I was pausing the movie along the way and asking her, what do you think is happening? What do you think is happening? Because I was super curious.
God, that'd be annoying.
Well, not every 2 minutes, but you know. So yeah. So how about the opening? I'm super curious. Oh, so by the way, let me just say up front, this is a movie that you definitely do not want spoiled for yourself. If you have not seen this movie and you want to see a fun kind of horror comedy, because this is definitely not a horror movie, even though it's on our Friday Night Frights edition. So we are going to go right into spoilers probably. And we'd recommend, if you've not seen this movie, stop now and go watch it and then come back. But no one's paying attention to that. So Marcus, we'll just go over to you. So opening scene, I'm super curious. Like, you know, you are going to sit in or join a movie that's The Cabin in the Woods. And all of a sudden, these two guys are driving a golf cart around. So I'm super curious. Like, what was your opening take?
Yeah, I thought initially it was the wrong movie, which is kind of funny because I read that's what their initial view was also. I'm like, wait a minute. Isn't this a horror movie? Like, at least it should be like teenagers getting ready to go somewhere or something like that.
Right.
Why am I in a corporate setting? So it definitely did throw me off for a second. And that whole wrapper, if you call it a wrapper, I don't know what you call the larger story in the story. Kind of confusing for a while. You're like, what are these guys actually doing? You're like, it didn't make sense for probably the first half of the movie. And then you kind of pieced it together.
So do you remember what you thought it might be just in terms of, you know, as it was unfolding, like say for the first 30 minutes, did you have a sense of kind of where it was going at that point?
Not quite. I kind of pieced it together. I think at a couple points they were like controlling aspects of the scene and you kind of go, okay, these guys are doing, I thought it was like more of an experiment or something like that. I didn't quite get the larger aspect of human sacrifice or larger gods or whatever they're,
yeah.
Whatever
the old gods.
The ancient ones.
I thought it was good. I thought it was quite a fun movie. I would say it's a horror movie, but it's not that scary. We can get into that as we go, but it was fun. It was great comedy. I love the premise and all in all, it was a good watch. I thought until the end, probably the last 20 minutes, I thought it wasn't too gory. It wasn't too scary. So if, like someone who wasn't that into horror movies, I thought it would be a pretty good one for them to watch, but then all shit takes loose at the end. And so it gets a little bit gory and it gets a little bit, a little over the top at the very end, but fun. So I still think it's a good movie. The first half is a little more tame.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes I have to ask you about when we get there, because there's one moment that's my favorite scene in the movie, which is, I think, is really funny. Hey, Colin, how about you, just in terms of, when's the last time you saw this movie?
I think it was probably around 2015.
And was that the first time you had seen it?
Yeah, the first time I saw it was the first time I saw it.
Well, okay, that's a good point. But I guess, had you seen it since then?
No, it sort of was, it was actually in my Hulu queue for quite a while, sort of saving it up. So I'm glad that we did this.
Because I will say, this is a movie that I think works best the very first time you see it because of the surprises attached to it. You know, it's a lot of fun. And the second time you go through it, you can watch it a little bit differently. And since you know what's coming, there's lots of little, you know, Easter eggs and things that you can watch for that are kind of fun. But I remember the first time I saw this movie, I was super impressed and surprised just because it's such a high concept movie, or it's a very weird structure. Having, you know, this horrible thing unfolding in the woods, and then it's all being monitored by this, just a casual office environment. It's a great combination. So I think it's a really, really smart script, and this whole movie, I think, is tons of fun.
I don't really believe in spoilers, so I don't think it'd be that ruined if people saw it.
If you're listening to this podcast, you should have seen the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if there's one key thing that spoils a whole movie, is a movie really all that great? Like, I don't know.
You mean like a M. Night Shyamalan twist?
Yeah. Either it's a good movie or it's not, regardless of like, oh, you knew this one thing going in or not.
Like, it's just not as good anymore on the second watch because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah. But then it's probably not that good of a movie if the whole thing hinges on one piece of information.
I would agree with you. But I think, yeah, I think a lot of movies that do have a big twist are good on the second rewatch. It just doesn't have that wow moment at the end.
Yeah.
This one, it had been quite some years since I'd seen it. And so I've got a terrible memory. So it was sort of like watching it for the first time, except, you know, I knew what was going to happen. I just didn't know what was going to happen, like, you know, scene by scene.
Piece by piece.
So it was a lot of fun to rewatch it, I have to say. Really did sort of marvel at how they structured this film. Because even going in, I think it was probably 25 minutes into the film, you still didn't really quite know what was going on.
Yeah,
they did it really well. I have to say, I was very, very impressed, and I like the opening to the movie because it's just very mysterious. You're like, wait a minute, what am I watching here? I'm like, what's going on? And even when you get to the first scene with the kids packing up to go to the cabin, and then they drive away, and you see this guy with an earpiece who's like monitoring them. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Like right off the bat, you're like, what the hell is going on here? And it's just fun that it takes you on a ride, and it's interesting, right? Because it's also here making fun of predictable horror tropes, and it's playing, you know, straight into those stereotypes. It's using that to great effect in terms of how you would kind of take that apart. So the fact that they're actually manufacturing those tropes is pretty funny. And there are several moments over the course of the movie that reflect that. So, you know, one is you pop open the door to the basement just slams open all of a sudden, right? It's like, oh, got to go down to the basement. And then, of course, there's a few great moments. We should all stay together. And then they pipe some gas into there. And Chris Hemsworth, like, okay, now we need to split up. Just, you know,
yeah.
It's just tons of fun. This is a super smart script.
Yeah. And they're dropping little clues along the way, but you're still not quite sure what it's all leading to. I mean, there's lines about free will and transgression and choose to ignore the harbinger. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
what is this? I'm really, really, like, I really want to know what's happening.
Well, and then you have the moment where the bird is, you know, soaring through the sky and then it goes like straight into the, you know, electric fence thing or the force field. And you're, mm-hmm. and you're like, now really, what is, what the hell is this thing? Like what?
That was a total head scratch. Yeah. Like, what have I gotten myself into here?
Which is kind of cool though. Cause you have that initial kind of corporate scene. And then they cut to the more common, what you'd expect of the start of a horror movie, is the five kids getting ready, and you get introduced to all the characters. At that moment, you kind of forget about the corporate scene. And you're like, okay, I know what I'm in for. They're getting together. They're going away for a cabin. All right, they got the RV. Like, they set it all up. We're not going to have cell phones. We won't have GPS. You're like, okay, I'm in. Five kids going to a cabin in the woods. This would be great. And you kind of forget about that initial, like, kind of side story for a second, and you just, like, okay, let's go. This is gonna be a fun horror movie because that's a great, great trope. But yeah, then you get all these other little people, like when they're driving away, you're like, yeah, that guy with the headphones. Like, oh yeah, wait a minute, there is something else to this.
Yeah. Why is there a guy on the roof watching them? Yeah. You know, it's very inventive. And then, you know, and then you cutting back to the scenes in the underground facility, taking bets, and they're talking about what's going to happen, but without, just in generalities, and you're just, what is happening here? How are these two divergent storylines gonna just come and get married together?
And they do so fantastically at the end.
I was very impressed that they actually wrote this thing in 3 days. They must have had a lot of cocaine in that hotel room.
Crossed my mind that, okay, they aren't really going to die. They're going to be kind of taken off until poor Jules' head gets cut off. You're like, okay, some of it's just like a setup, like a reality show or something like that. They were watching and controlling them. Did you guys think that, or did you think, no, this is real from the start?
Oh, I always thought the violence was going to be real against them, but I wasn't quite sure what the scenario was in terms of how they, or you know, why these people specifically, and why were they doing it to him? That was the big question. But I was pretty sure they were going to die. That was my thinking.
Yeah, I don't really recall because it was so long ago. I think I sort of figured that, yeah, people are going to die. I mean, it is a horror movie, right? Yeah. So people will die.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I wasn't sure. And then, like, I think Jules' hand gets stabbed. I'm like, okay, they're not just setting him up on some sort of, like, scare reality show that went wrong. That's why I was initially thinking, oh, it's going to be a reality show that goes wrong or something. Or
I knew that shit was going to get real when Jules tongued the wolf.
that's what pushed your buttons? Like, this is going to be a violent
There's
film.
A makeout sesh going on with a wolf's head. So, yeah, it's about to go down.
If we want to jump quickly to the cast, Chris Hemsworth was in it, and he's the athlete. And for Jules, so she was played by Anna Hutchinson. And I thought she was actually the better of the two leading women. I thought I liked her kind of scared, kind of scream girl better than Kristen Connolly, who played the lead.
The virgin.
What's that? Yeah, the virgin.
But I'm going to have to give the MVP award to, it's a three-way award between Fran Kranz as Marty, the stoner. And
Marty wins.
But of course, Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford as the two guys in, you know, working in the office as the directors of the whole experiment or whatever, the sacrifice, whatever you want to call it. They're just fantastic. And their dialogue and their banter back and forth and their banter with other people in the office is just fantastic. They're just great. And I really love both those actors. And it's hard for me now to look at Richard Jenkins and not think of the T-Rex moment from Step Brothers.
When I was a kid, when I was a little boy, I always wanted to be a dinosaur. I wanted to be a Tyrannosaurus Rex more than anything in the world. I made my arms short, and I roamed the backyard, and I chased the neighborhood cats, and I growled, and I roared. Everybody knew me and was afraid of me. And then one day my dad said, Bobby, you're 17. It's time to throw childish things aside. And I said, okay, Pop. But he didn't really say that. He said, stop being a fucking dinosaur and get a job.
If you're not familiar with that, Marcus, you should see that moment. It's pretty funny.
Never seen it.
Have you not seen Step Brothers?
I haven't seen Step Brothers. Haven't seen Anchorman. I pass on a lot of Will Ferrell content.
That might be a pickup opportunity.
Sorry. Oh, that's too bad.
You missed out on the fucking Catalina wine mixer, dude.
Step Brothers is awesome.
So how about Jesse Williams as Holden? So he plays Holden. He is the scholar. I was not really familiar with him. Is he an actor that you recognize?
No.
Nope. I looked at his IMDb, and one of the things he starred in was a remake of Jacob's Ladder in 2019, which I had no idea that they had remade Jacob's Ladder.
That's funny.
And then my other question, so Brian White plays Truman. So he is the one who is kind of the more serious guard who's inside the facility with them. He's the one who doesn't seem to be having a good time when everybody else is having a good time. I was a little bit unclear. I had a question about his character. Like, what was his role exactly? And why was he a little bit more serious? Because he was new to the job or what?
Well, yeah, I think so. But I don't really understand what his job was either. Was he security?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was security.
Honestly, I think his character was just there to serve the purpose of someone on the inside who had never witnessed this either. And so we sort of get to experience it along with him.
And he's a little bit of a conscious.
Yeah, demonstrating conscience. Yeah.
He's the way that they get to explain it to the audience because they're explaining things to him.
Yeah, I do love Marty because it's funny. They put him in the stoner role, but really he's the one who's in on everything. So he figures it out. He immediately knows what's going on. And I do think it's pretty interesting because his comment when he pulls up, he has this, by the way, he has apparently the bong that he has that extends out to a bong and then goes down to a cup. apparently that's a real thing, and it was the prototype to build it was $5,000, which I think is pretty interesting. But so when he pulls up and he says,
statistical fact, cops will never pull over a man with a huge bong in his car. Why? They fear this man. They know he sees farther than they, and he will bind them with ancient logics.
So I think that's a pretty interesting line, because he's basically kind of laying it out there to say, oh yeah, he is going to be seeing further than anybody else or seeing through the bullshit. He self-identifies early in the movie as somebody who's going to be responsible for some level of exposition, but he's also obviously in on what's going on. He figures out what's going on a lot faster than everybody else.
The jester speaks the truth.
I have some questions around that, but we can save it for later, about Marty and his being high all the time.
Well, just throw them out now.
No.
You want to ask the question, but you want to ask the question during a very specific period of time in the podcast.
I'd rather ask it after we've sort of gone through a little bit of it.
All right. Well, anybody else in the cast you want to hit?
I don't really want to hit anyone in the cast, but I mean, well,
Anna Hutchinson.
Anna Hutchinson. I really enjoyed her dance.
Casting her and Alison Lohman, they would be like the same exact roles they'd be going for. They look quite similar, I thought.
Well, I mean, they're young, thin, blonde. There's a lot of them out there.
I guess. All right. Scratch that.
All right. Well, hey, Marcus, how about a plot summary?
Five teenagers head off for a weekend at a secluded cabin in the woods. They arrive to find a... What did I write down? the cellar door flings open, and they go down to investigate, and shit starts getting real. Do not read the Latin!
I love that.
He's drawing the line.
There's a lot of good quotes in this.
Don't read the Latin. Really, oh, the dialogue is really smart.
I'm drawing a line in the fucking sand here. Do not read the Latin.
That's so good. The plot is like, it's hard to summarize because there's kind of two plots going on. But the basic plot is the typical five, I wouldn't even call them teenagers. I guess they are. They're in college. Are going off into the woods. The cousin's cabin. What?
Sorry, it's just like one of the last lines at the very end. I don't think Kurt even has a cousin.
I did have that as a question, which is, how did they arrange all this, you know, so perfectly, right? So in terms of him getting access to the cabin and all that, so
I have just tons of questions around this. I really actually want to know more about this whole organization. How it got started, what's the history of it, how's it changed over the years, how far does it extend globally? We know it already a little bit. You know, how many actual cities or countries are involved in this? Like, you know, we know about Brazil and
Spain,
Stockholm,
and Japan.
Spain, Japan, but and how many Stockholm. Other countries are involved in this? You know, like, it's really, really interesting stuff. They should do a prequel.
I think the overall story is that, like, all horror, like, it just says, it makes canon all horror movies are all run by this organization, right?
That all horror movies?
Yeah, well, they're saying, like, horror movies are real. Like, so imagine the world of horror movies. Mm-hmm. Like, you're inside that world where all these kids get chased, right? All of those are real, and they're all being run by this organization. So it just canonizes all horror movies into one universe. Mm-hmm. And then it's all being controlled by this organization, right?
Yeah.
So, like, The Ring, right? Because they show the Japan one.
Right.
Yeah. So the Ring horror movie.
She's now is safe in a frog or whatever. They're singing in a circle. Yeah.
So all of those just kind of combine into one world.
Yeah.
And then it's all being run by the organization.
No, I know. But I want to know more about the organization. Like, because obviously this has been going on for thousands of years.
Right.
Human sacrifice. At what point did the leaders of the world get together and go, let's formalize this. Let's apply some ISO 9000 to this. Let's really get this going. We need budget.
Job recs.
Yeah.
I mean, good corporate structure.
It's sort of like NASA, but it's like a secret sacrifice organization. Like I said, I just want to know more. I find it fascinating.
So everybody who's working there just appears to be effectively a normal human, right?
Yeah.
And so the back and forth when Ed Hadley says, you know, I remember when you could just throw a girl in a volcano, and he says, how old do you think I am?
Exactly.
So they're referencing, so in that case, they're referencing that probably this organization back in the day was the one that was chucking people into volcanoes, right?
I think they're referencing the fact that back in the day,
human sacrifice.
Yeah, this is what human sacrifice was. Like, human sacrifice was real, and that's how it got done. But at some point in human history, things start to formalize a bit. Right,
the gods weren't happy just throwing them in. They wanted to see some
right. They wanted to be entertained.
Yeah, they needed an athlete, a jester.
You know, why is it that the rest of the world doesn't know what's going on? Why is it so secret? Is it because, you know, at some point
all of world society would collapse if they knew that, you know, there were these giant old gods that could come back and inhabit the earth?
Because you also need that the five people have to be have to go through an authentic experience. Not a, okay, this is, we're the five for the sacrifice.
So at some point, just literally just like throwing a virgin into a volcano, it wasn't enough anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those and, fucking
and
gods,
then they needed an athlete, and then they needed a scholar, and then the gesture, and then the.
Well, since we're on this, because I do have a couple more questions. So the tunnel sabotage?
Yes. Okay. Perfect.
So the characters do a really smart thing, right? Because a couple of them die and they're like, screw this, we're out of here, right? Which normally doesn't happen in a horror movie. So this is, it's kind of interesting because it's kind of a counter trope in that one, because they're like, nope, we're out of here. And they jump in their RV and they start speeding away. And then there's this scene where Citizen actually has to run down and manually trigger a collapse on the tunnel. But one of the thing that gets said a little bit later during the party is that they're talking about that something happened and that it wasn't their fault and that there was a power reroute from upstairs.
Right.
So I'm super curious. Yes. So what does that mean? Does that mean that...
That was Marty, because right, he'd broken into whatever. He'd found the elevator and he was playing with the wires. So I took it as he was messing with the system, and what he did ended up breaking whatever else that they were using.
Oh, fuck you, Marcus. Thanks for just explaining that away. I had all this great, you know, conspiracy theory stuff, but you just answered my fucking question. Well, that makes a lot of sense, by the way. Yeah.
Because then they cut to Marty up in the elevator. They're like, oh, he's alive still. Like, he made it through. And they cut to him. They show the elevator.
It's interesting because I took that entirely differently, right? Which is a power reroute from upstairs, like upstairs in quotes, right? That there was some other being that was somehow part of this whole God thing and had somehow putting influence on the situation specifically to have it fail. Like, that was my read on it at the time.
Yeah, I think that's what they wanted you to think. But then, like, the upstairs just, right, because they took an elevator down. So I think the upstairs was just literally the outside world.
Literally the upstairs. Yeah, because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, some decision came from like upstairs? Is there more going on?
Management or something.
That we know. Right. Was there like a plot from the inside to have the US fail? What about all these other countries? Like, how could they all fail as well? Even the Japanese. And I'm thinking,
we captured the spirit into this frog.
Right. I'm thinking there's something else going on here. And then, you know, somebody had to know that the Marty's extra strong weed was going to inoculate him to the chemicals. You know, there's more to this, right? Well, apparently not. It's very simple. Marty was fucking around. By the way, that's a huge plot hole, I think, that Marty lived, because we quite clearly saw blood being drained into the fool. When each of them dies, blood gets drained into the little impression into in the wall of their character. And
I'd have to go back and look for Marty, because I was tracking let's keep track of who's getting killed and how. And then he was just dragged away. And so I'm like, oh, dragged away, question mark.
I'm pretty sure that right after that they showed blood being
I'd have to go back
being and look. Poured into the mold or whatever it was.
So I had a question about that in terms of the mythology or the actions there, because there's a character that dies, you know, pretty far away from where they are in the office. And then immediately they turn around and they trigger this lever on the wall, and it fills blood into one of the, you know, the outlines of these characters or the archetypes, right? So the whore, the athlete, the scholar, et cetera. It's unlikely that they would have been able to recover the body instantly and be able to do that. So I was kind of assuming that maybe it was they had some blood that was already available as part of the sacrifice to drain into those things. So I don't think the blood was necessarily Marty's.
They have really good pipes. Good sewage, good irrigation, good routing. They're moving this stuff quickly.
Well, considering they were able to put up a force field, I feel like you're probably right, Marcus. They could have overcome that challenge. But yeah, you're right, Dave. They might have just had like a big vat of blood ready to go, and they just assumed that Marty was killed. And you know what happens when you assume?
Makes an ass out of you and me, I believe.
No, it's just that you make the wrong choice.
Oh, okay. So can we talk about just all the references in this movie for a second? Because that was another thing that I just found kind of fun. The cabin itself, there's a lot of Evil Dead inspiration there when they pull up to the cabin.
Oh, man. I thought, I'm like, holy cow, are we just doing another? Like, it's like five friends. They go to the cabin. You look at the cabin and you're like, oh, it's Evil Dead. Like,
yeah.
Like, we're stuck in this Evil Dead loop. And even like the initial shot of the cabin, it's like the low shot from the ground. I mean, it's a total nod to how they shot Evil Dead.
You actually do have deadites on the board as one of the options for that can come alive to kill you.
Yep.
I mean, it's a pretty, and then of course the basement door coming open and leading to the cellar where the bad stuff is. And even a book that has Latin in it, right? Or in this case, I mean, on Evil Dead, I know it's Sumerian, but you know, Latin in this case, there's a lot of Evil Dead inspiration here.
I guess the Buckners didn't know Sumerian, so they had to go Latin.
Yeah.
Do not read the Latin.
You know, then they're in the RV, obviously. So that's the Hills Have Eyes. That's what I think of with, you know, them traveling when they get attacked by those mutants
I always think of Vacation, but whatever. Yeah. I haven't seen The Hills Have Eyes, but I know.
Have you seen the new Vacation with?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I thought it was hilarious.
No, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was funny. Well, and then of course you have Hellraiser, so that's a big one, right? When they go down and they have the puzzle box, yeah. And he's messing with the puzzle box.
By the way, that guy, because I was gonna say, like, you know, the guy with the saw blades in his head, is he supposed to be like a
Cenobite? Like
a Cenobite, right? And apparently he actually has a name.
It's Sawman?
Sawman, no. His name is Fornicus, Lord of Bondage and Pain.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a stand-in for Pinhead.
Yeah. No, but it was perfect. It was like, because you immediately know who that guy is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And also when they had the puzzle box, but it was not a box. It was like a globe.
Looked like a football. What's the crystal one that they win for the national championship?
It's called the crystal football. I don't know. for the BCS. Anyway, we're not talking about football. Yeah. We're talking about Fornicus, okay?
So then you have lots of shots at the end of, you know, when all those creatures are coming out, right? You have there's one that I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie The Strangers. It's a home invasion movie. You actually see masks that are super similar to that. You know, you have the traditional kind of werewolf. There's I think at the one point you see like a vampire. You have a bunch of big oversized creatures. I did not see a reference to Nightmare on Elm Street. I was looking for that, but I didn't see it. Did you guys pick up one?
No.
I was kind of surprised they wouldn't have some dude that would have kind of like an oversized glove of knives or something like that. Lots of stuff is flying fast and furious. I think my favorite is the unicorn.
The unicorn is fucking great. Hey, it's a unicorn. It
just takes a run and just gores that guy.
Who knew that unicorns were such assholes?
Yeah. All the creature stuff, all the references. It's just, it's tons of fun.
I listed out all of the creatures if you want me to just run it up through it really quickly.
Let's do it at the end for the choose your death.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's do that upstairs.
If there's any other characters you wanted to talk about? I think Marty was my, Marty was one of my favorite. It was pretty hilarious throughout.
I liked Chris Hemsworth as Kurt because I was thinking when I saw it, Hemsworth was a bigger star. Yeah. And so I was thinking he was going to be the hero of this movie. It certainly would make it to the end. And then he, you know, he gets on the motorbike and jumps and has a spectacular death.
Well, since you mentioned it, can we talk about that scene a little bit? Because that is my absolute favorite moment from this movie.
Yeah.
I love that moment because, you know, they had given him, they've pumped him up to be the jock, you know, kind of bravado guy, right? He has the chemicals in his body. And so he's a badass and he has his motorcycle and he's going to jump. And I just love the way they position his dialogue and the way that the score music is going. Like it's all building to this fantastic jump moment.
Look, you guys, you stay in the Rambler. I'll get help. And if I wipe out, I'll fucking limp for help. But I'm coming back here. I'm coming back with cops and choppers and large fucking guns. And those things are going to pay.
Hold back.
Never do.
subversive as hell, man. They just he slams right into the wall and then he falls down. And I was watching like, that with Jessamy last night, and she went, "What?" And then I started laughing hysterically, and then she turned around and looked at me and she said, "You're laughing at that?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's pretty funny." That is my favorite moment in the movie, and it's partially because when I was watching it for the very first time, it completely caught me flat-footed. It was just a really fun moment. So I kudos to them for that, because I think it's just great.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. They really fucked with your expectations, and I didn't even think about the fact that there was that the force field. So it was a nice callback.
You don't know much about the Chris Hemsworth character, and he's kind of playing like the jock bravado sort of thing. But in the beginning, he also gives
Dana.
A book recommendation, and then at one point they reference the fact that he is going to school on an academic scholarship, right? So that totally like throws you on what's going on there. So I just, again, it's kind of. The subversion is fun because it just keeps you a little bit off balance.
The books at the beginning, guys, she's like, "Oh, what if I get bored?" He's like, "Soviet economic structures? What are you doing?" Jill's like, "I learned it from you."
I know. Well, that's the thing. That's what I was going to say, is that you could tell Hemsworth was going to be a star just from this performance, because he's got just that charm and the comic chops. Because he's holding the books and he's like, "Where did you get these? Who taught you this?" Yeah. And she's like, "I learned it from you. I learned it from watching you." It's really good.
Oh, it's so funny. The two of them together, that's why I thought...
They had really good chemistry.
Yeah, I thought the two of them were a much better pair than Christine Connolly and Franz. Marty.
Well, she wasn't with Marty, but...
At the end, they were.
At the end.
By the way, apparently when you read the trivia, the reason why Marty didn't jump in the water with all the other... characters is because apparently the actor in real life was shredded, like he had a better body than Chris Hemsworth is what they said. And so they kept him in baggy clothes to cover it up, because they said that it wouldn't fit his character if he stripped off his shirt and he was just ripped, so
they call him like Ripped Jesus.
Yeah, Ripped Jesus. Jesus. Oh, yeah,
Ripped Jesus.
Fun trivia.
I can't go in the water because I'm stupid.
All right, well, how about the scream meter in terms of, were you actually scared at all watching this movie?
No.
I think there's a couple of decent jump scares. I think the initial time the cellar door slams open was kind of a good moment. I think when Holden, he gets pithed in the throat in the RV was kind of a good surprise moment, but there wasn't that much tension, and they had way too much humor, I think, early on and throughout, that it kind of kept it pretty light, I thought.
Yeah, I don't think this movie is scary at all, really. I mean, this is on a scale from 1 to 10, I might go... 3, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple moments I thought were well done, and that would have scared me if I was like in a dark room, like a theater, by myself. And that was when the werewolf comes out of the darkness.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Does it twice, actually. I liked that werewolf design. That werewolf scares me. Werewolves in general scare me. So,
yeah, that's right. You do have a small werewolf phobia, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Maybe we're going to have to watch The Howling at some point.
Oh, that could be interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The biggest scare that got Jessamy was the credits. You know, when they were, because when they're cruising in the golf cart and all it says, "The Cabin in the Woods," there's quite a score, score jolt when the credits show up. So yeah, she jumped pretty good. It's funny.
Well, then Jessamy and I have something in common.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That with the last one, right?
Yeah.
Drag Me to
Hell. Oh, the Ghost Out. House Productions or whatever it was?
Yeah. The door slamming. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
They did the music a couple of times, and it wasn't quite as effective, I thought. Like, I don't think the timing on that and trying to get the scare worked quite as well as I think what they were aiming for. Yeah, I'd say pretty relatively low on the scare factor.
Yeah, I didn't think the antagonists that they selected were all that compelling. And when you see all the creatures at the end, it kind of makes you yearn, like, oh man, I wish you'd pick something. I wish you'd pick something else.
You didn't want zombie rednecks.
the effects design and the character design of those characters, it looks kind of cool, but they're mostly in shadow, so you don't really see. There's not a lot of good detail that you can kind of make out. So the characters are kind of just okay. I did think the guy that had the bear trap on the chain that he was swinging around as a weapon was pretty cool. Like that was, I like that as a concept from a weapon standpoint.
Yeah, bear trap as weapon. It's kind of cool. Like, I don't know if it would actually ever work. Like, he actually trapped grabbed them in the back or something like that. But it was kind of it fucking hurt if someone threw a bear trap at you and it hit you.
It's like it happens to them, and then they kind of just shake it off too. So it's. Like Holden, I think at one point gets it in the back, and then he's perfectly okay with it.
Squeamish factor, blood, guts, gore. How much wincing would you say?
It's probably a 5, just average.
Overall, it was pretty low until the end. In the end scenes when like all sorts of mayhem starts happening in that one by the elevators. Or were they zombies eating brains or something like that? And the whole area is covered in blood. That's a bit much. But overall in the movie, it's not as bad. Most of the kills and stuff like that aren't that in your face and gory.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't see a lot of close-up violence on the main characters themselves, right? So initially, Marty is kind of dragged off screen, even though he doesn't end up really dying. Obviously, with the bike jump, that's just from a distance. So probably Holden is the one where you see the most impact from a single character, right? Because he gets the knife through the back of the throat. But that's over relatively quickly. So I don't think the actual gore on the main
Jules characters. Just gets her head chopped off.
She gets her head chopped off, but that also happens kind of quickly and somewhat in shadow, right? So it's not you're not seeing a really... So I don't think this is a particularly gory movie. And I think that most of the gore is more in that, gore for humor, like a little bit of the cartoonish violence because everything goes to shit at the end. So
Yeah.
And I was laughing. At that point, I was laughing though. It was just like...
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So much shit was going on. It's like, oh God, this is like... This is crazy.
All right, well, let me ask you a question about the facility since we're here. Why in God's name would you have a purge button for all of your monster cages?
I have that exact same button. Like, you think they put a password on that? Or like, there's not going to be one button they can open.
Like, what if you accidentally lean on that thing, and all of a sudden it's like you let everybody out in the...
Is that what happened in 98 when they had the glitch back in 98?
Who knows?
I'd like to know what that was.
Yeah. How about the effects? What'd you guys think of the special effects?
I thought it was mostly digital at the end with all the creatures. I think the zombies were the most practical effects, and I thought that was really good. The initial 5 and their deaths weren't that highlighted. It seemed like they played that down a lot, and so I don't think they had as many effects in those kills in those areas. I thought the zombies were pretty cool though, the masks and stuff that they had. They were pretty terrifying.
Yeah, I thought the effects were really quite good.
Yeah, I thought the effects were actually really good as well. The interesting thing to me inside the facility where they have all the monitors going, this is another trivia note, but apparently they had to film a whole bunch of sequences and then show those on the monitor. So, most of the time they would do a green screen effect, but they didn't have the time or the money to do that. So apparently they had to actually line up all these individual monitors and play, these pre-recorded other camera views onto it. So the stuff that you see on the monitors is real, which I think that's pretty cool. That's a nice little touch. That must have been very hard to accomplish.
No, I know. Good filmmaking. They had one of the guys, I think it was maybe like the intern, and he's got these signs that he's holding up. I don't know what they said, but you could tell it was just like, I'm trying to survive here. Someone please come rescue me.
Yeah, I did like when they were like, when they first got to the elevator, and they're seeing all the different creatures, how they did like pan out and zoomed, and you were able to see all the different ones. Like the mist coming in was really creepy, and all the different ones there were really, really cool.
Right next to them, as they panned out, was like a giant spider. Okay, that's not going to work for me.
That's absolute lowest on my list for what happens. By the way, Colin, that sign that the guy's holding up is, help me, I'm in a utility closet, a dragon bat has my scent, I'm Ronald the intern. Nice. But they said they couldn't get it to work, so that's why you can't see it that well. Okay, how about your overall favorite death, or what was the coolest kill?
When we're talking about the actual characters who got killed...
You only get 3?
Yeah, but then there's also the people at the end, so I didn't even think about that, because from the stars of the film, I would have said Kurt doing his best Evel Knievel impression. That was definitely very cool.
I was going to say Jules. Even though you don't see much of it, just seeing that saw and like the teeth on the saw, they were going to cut off her head. It was pretty like, oh, that's gruesome. Like that would just be terrible.
But you don't even get to see it.
You don't see it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You don't see it, but that would be like...
Well, then how about pithed by a unicorn?
The unicorn one was a great
one. That would be a hard shot to the old abdomen on that one.
And I did like the kind of axe thump into the back of Sigourney Weaver's head was a kind of a good end there.
I do love the fact that this movie effectively ends with the end of the world.
Yeah, I know. That was an unexpected ending. Because let's be honest. Kill Marty or don't kill Marty. You obviously have to kill Marty.
Right? You think so?
In real life?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So if it comes down to it, and if you and I are there and you have to kill me to save the world, you're going to kill me?
Yeah, Dave. I'm going to kill you to save the world.
Dude, dick move. Why don't we go out together? Dave,
I would expect you to just say, I got this, don't worry, and off yourself.
Take one for the team?
What about your family? Huh? They're going to die.
No, that's a good point. All right. In an end-of-the-world scenario, Colin, I'm totally on board with you killing me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
As I say, I don't know if I'd want to live with the horrors that I've seen, and like, it'd just be nightmares forever. Just let the world end. It's fine. It's time for a new run.
What is your death? What's your creature that you choose to kill you, or maybe what's your death otherwise in the film?
This is easy. This is like, so easy.
Like, what's the worst one, or what's the
no?
Like,
you have to make a choice. You're going out, so and you have to choose death by one of those creatures. What is your choice?
This is super 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 easy.
Okay,
sexy witches.
Well, you saw sexy witches on there, but you're not sure what sexy witches are going to do to you, right?
Well, I can imagine.
What if they're messing with your sensitive parts? What if that happens as part of the process?
The fact that they're sexy, they're already messing with my private parts. So.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So
I don't know. Well,
you have some exposure, either figuratively or literally, depending on the situation.
I just figure they'll do witch stuff, but at least they'll be sexy.
All right, Colin, give us the list.
Okay, so we got werewolf, alien beast, mutants, wraiths, zombies, reptilius, clowns, witches, sexy witches, demons, hell lord, angry molesting tree, giant snake, deadites, Kevin, mummy, the bride, the scarecrow folk, snowman, dragon bat, vampires, dismemberment goblins, sugar plum fairy, merman, the reanimated, unicorn, the Huron, Sasquatch / Wendigo / Yeti, dolls, the doctors, zombie redneck torture family, aka the Buckners, jack-o'-lantern, giant, and twins.
I did notice the twins from Shining. I'll take the unicorn spear. At least be kind of cool that, like, hey, it's a unicorn. Dead.
I think I might just want to be like, I might just want to be destroyed by that giant snake thing. Just, you know, like, just take me out in 2 seconds or swallow me whole or something.
If I can't have sexy witches, I'll just go vampires or maybe snowman.
All right. So the worst death, spiders.
Oh, fuck yeah. Are you kidding me? Like, you know what? Honestly, if I was in a situation like if I figured out that I was going to be sacrificed and I looked outside the window and those were like big spiders, I'd just off myself right there in the cabin right there. I'm like, yeah, look, I'm doing it for you. Couldn't handle it.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even. No, I mean, no. Just no. By the way, Kevin. So Kevin is a tribute to the Elijah Wood character
in Sin City.
In Sin City, yeah. I did not know. I had to look it up, but I was like, "What the fuck is Kevin?" Like, maybe Kevin would be the way to go, but no. After hearing that, I'll take my chances with sexy witches.
All right, so I think Colin has settled on sexy witches. I probably just want to be ripped apart by the big snake thing. Maybe just a get your head yanked off by the werewolf.
Listen to yourself. I just want to get ripped apart.
Well, it would be over pretty quick. That's what I'm thinking, right? I think your sexy witches are going to stake you to the ground and cast a bunch of spells on your penis.
They're sexy! Okay.
Well, you know what? I think they start sexy and then they turn into deadites. I think that's what you're going to end up with.
Okay.
And then maybe you still have to have sex with them. Marcus, did you make your choice?
Yeah, the unicorn. Give me the unicorn.
Okay. What did you guys learn from this movie?
I learned if you pull up to your holiday cabin and it looks like the one in The Evil Dead, just turn around and go home.
It seems to be a great lesson that people have still not learned in all these movies.
They have not.
I had a two-part learning, right? So very similar to yours. What I wrote down was, no cabin in the woods is ever safe, just in general. Like that's my takeaway. But then the second thing is, if you happen to end up in a cabin in the woods, do not go in the basement.
Yes.
That is a good lesson.
Those are the two lessons.
I mean, maybe we're just like in California and we don't have as many isolated spots. Just go to like Tahoe or Truckee. There's other cabins around. You have Wi-Fi. You have like cell phone connections. Why do you have to be so off-grid?
Yeah, I want to know where all these cabins are.
And if your cousin just bought a cabin, first of all, if you're driving up to the cabin and you stop for gas and old Mordecai comes out, just fuck this. We're going to the beach. Okay, you know, come on.
So I love the fact that they had the Mordecai character in there because that's a total trope, right? You remember old Fred from Friday the 13th?
He's also, we just watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They had that, you stop for gas and you see this family. You're like, fuck this. This is like, no. Wrong path. Go somewhere else.
I really love Mordecai. The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
Am I on speakerphone?
So great. And he's so like, funny. Am I still on speakerphone? I'm still on speakerphone, aren't I?
And they're all cracking up in the background. Oh, it's so funny.
I love Hadley's response on that when they tell him that the call's coming in. He says, Jesus Christ. Like, that's his, you know. He's like, oh, Jesus Christ. And then he's going to talk to Mordecai. So,
yeah, we got a harbinger on the line. Yeah. Good stuff. There's a lot of really funny quotes in this. And just other stuff, too. Like, you know, where they have the, when with Jules, they're like, guess how we're slowing down cognition? It's the hair dye. Oh, dumb blonde. Like that, just that whole thing was like really good stuff. And then, of course, Marty having his conversation with Dana.
You're not seeing what you don't want to see. Puppeteers.
Puppeteers?
Pop-Tarts? Did you say you're Pop-Tarts?
Marty, I love you. You're really high.
Just really good stuff.
And who did you think of when you heard Pop-Tarts?
Andy.
Yes. Shout out to Andy. I once watched Andy try to pick up on a girl by walking up to her and saying, care for a Pop-Tart? That was really? That was his opening line.
Did it work?
Up in Chico. Not sure how well it worked, but.
I love when they get the news about that Japan failed and Citizen goes, Japan fucked us. How hard is it to kill 9-year-olds?
Yeah.
And then he's like looking at the screen. He's just like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Richard Jenkins is great.
Oh my God, he's
really good.
He just crushes it. He's so great in this movie.
And then Hadley, who always wanted to see the merman. And then like at the end, the merman's like crawling towards him. And he's like, oh, come on. Yeah. And then it kills him. That's good.
And I do love the fact that you know that he wants the merman. And then when they're down in the basement, he's holding the conch shell. And he's like, come on. He's like, come on, man. He had the shell in his hand.
That was like very inventive. Like they're down in the cellar and you see all this stuff. And I'm thinking like, oh man, this is like that room that that couple has in The Conjuring where they've got all those.
Oh, the possessed artifacts.
The possessed artifacts. It's just like that. I'm like, oh shit. Like I would not want to be down in that cellar.
I'm not seeing that one.
No.
You should see it. Maybe we can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Dave doesn't like it.
It's not that I didn't like it. I was underwhelmed based on the hype. The fact that they built a whole universe off of this movie. I was surprised that I was expecting it to be better. That's all. Mm.
But I did like also Marty was in the basement scene. So they're looking at all the artifacts. And he's like, no, this isn't good. No, this is, I dare you. I dare you all to go upstairs. Let's go upstairs. I dare you to go upstairs.
Well, so I have a question then. When they're down in the basement and Marty, I love the fact that Marty hears the voices and like, get out, yeah, or whatever it is.
Yeah. But go for a walk. He's like, oh, maybe I'll go for a walk.
What are those voices or why are those voices being played? Do you think that is intended to be that they get one last warning before they take their action? Is that what it's for?
I think it's to just scare them and try and set them up into whatever they're trying to do.
Colin, did you have an opinion?
I thought it was just part of the Buckner family lore. You know, it's like ghosts from the past.
Why is Marty the only one that hears it, though?
Nobody else did?
No, it was only Marty.
Really?
Because I think the weed is messing with what they're
trying to do. No, I get that, but then you would assume that because he's immune to the effects, he's hearing something, which means that the other characters would not. So the logic doesn't quite work there.
I think they heard it, but because of the effects of whatever chemicals, they did not question it. Whereas Marty is like, okay, if you start hearing voices, creepy voices in an old cabin, you get out, you leave.
Right. So that's, I was kind of wondering if it was the last chance Mordecai type warning in some form, and they were still made their free will decision.
Yeah, I guess so. Probably.
So another question for me, there is a scene in the beginning that sets up this idea that between rooms, there's one way glass in a mirror. Doesn't really go anywhere though. Doesn't pay off to anything. So
he saves her. He crashes through it and saves her. Yeah. It wasn't a great payoff. You thought it would be something else. They just set it up to think it's a creepy house.
They make a point of focusing on the fact that there's a picture on the wall and the picture is showing sacrifice. So that makes sense to me. But beyond that, it's 2 to 3 minutes worth of film to kind of set up this one-way mirror and then they don't do anything with it. So I was just surprised.
they set up what a good guy, good upstanding guy.
Yeah, they do. I mean, that gives him a chance to have some character development. But beyond that, I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
And that Danon's innocent. Or
and by the way, if I didn't turn around and leave when I saw the cabin, when I saw the painting on the wall of like this lamb being slaughtered, that's probably what I do.
Or how about all the shit in the basement just in general, like at that point? You're like, definitely
when you see that stuff, but like we're talking even pre-seller.
Also, is like a mounting a wolf's head actually a thing? Like, it seems a little like, you know, you've heard of deer and maybe
no, that was something. Definitely unusual, but
yeah, well, a wolf.
how about make it out with a wolf? That was pretty hilarious.
I think it was Marty again who's like, no one's acting the same. Like, what's Kurt doing? He's a sociology major. What's he acting all this like tough guy stuff for?
Right.
And then like they kind of explain it by like they're pumping in that stuff and people are acting these roles that they normally aren't. So I thought that was a cool kind of explanation of why Jules might act like that.
Jules is the sex pot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like how do we get all these tropes and stereotypes? Well, we actually manipulate them into doing that because like,
yeah, exactly.
There are no people. You know, you wouldn't have exactly these types of people going off.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was kind of cool for like combining all horror movies into this one kind of canon universe. Like it's all controlled and kind of cool, yeah, interesting concept for sure.
I got a question just overall. Who do you think who's the protagonist in this film? I mean, who do you think you should be rooting for? Should you be rooting for the college kids or should you be rooting for the puppeteers? It's kind of normally it's you know, the college kids, right? But they're there to sacrifice, make a sacrifice for all of mankind. It's kind of a tough question here.
I'm rooting for Hadley. He's just trying to do his job. Just trying to do 9 to 5, punch his paycheck.
Maybe see a merman along the way.
He's a little frustrated because his wife is setting up child safety locks on all the cabinets in the house, and that's frustrating.
Exactly. He doesn't have a kid yet.
Yeah, it is interesting, Colin, because when you really think about it, then yes, you would want to vote for the puppeteers so that you're not killed with the rest of humanity when the old gods return.
Yeah, so what do you think happens after the ancient ones awaken and make their way to the surface?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was kind of wondering if it's one of those things where, you know, they appear and there's the equivalent of some sort of, you know, mass die-off of humanity or just these big creatures that are going to be stumbling around the earth and killing people for fun, or who knows what happens. But it was a fun ending, just the fact that
it definitely was.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yep, I guess that's it. World ends. So I guess you're not going to have a sequel.
Humanity was going to die off. I think that was Marty's last, one of his last things. Like, oh, time for another, let's give another civilization a chance.
One more question. So when Marty is attacked in the woods, he's pulled down and you see a splash of blood go up. So do you think that was what they were trying to show you? Was that Marty actually was the one that was inflicting some damage there? And that was the Buckner blood?
No, that must have been some of his blood because the Buckners don't have any blood. I mean, it might have been like black and greasy tar-like stuff that would have come from them.
Yeah, I just think that it's interesting because with that amount of blood coming up, then he definitely took some damage and he's able to get through the rest of the movie relatively okay.
Did you not see what was happening to Dana out on the dock?
Oh, yeah, she was getting like during the party.
By the way, that is a fucking great scene where
it's really good.
You're seeing her just taking all this punishment on the video screen. Meanwhile, like REO Speedwagon's playing and everyone's celebrating.
Yeah, having a party.
Really, really funny. Tequila. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was getting worked over by the bear trap and like you saw blood falling out of her and all sorts of stuff like going on. Not a good.
Well, it was. And after the first kill, there's a moment where Hadley and Stitterson, they say, you know, sort of some ritualistic words. And all of a sudden they get, you know, uncharacteristically serious as compared to how they're handling the rest of the movie. So do you think that was required as part of the ritual? I think that's what they had to do. They had to speak those words.
Yeah, I think so. And it's also, well, this is like a solemn moment. They try to make their work life, I think, as enjoyable as it can be. But ultimately,
knowing that they're slaughtering innocent human beings.
Right. Well,
they're saving the world.
Well, they're not technically slaughtering them.
Right.
They're just leading them to their slaughter.
By the way, apparently for every single one of those monsters, they did create an object and have it in the basement of the, you know, for that in that scene.
Yeah.
I did not
really,
see.
Really well done.
I did not see any spider looking artifact, though. Because again, I was just, I'm afraid of oversized spiders. So I wanted to see, make sure how not to summon it.
Yeah, like I don't know which one of those creatures is the spider. Like, is it the Huron?
So are we doing arachnophobia next then? Is that our... Is it just a giant?
I didn't see a giant, but I did see a giant spider. Maybe they...
Somebody left the spider off?
What do you think, Colin? Arachnophobia?
No. Although, I remember it being pretty good, fun movie.
Oh, it's a good movie, for sure. Haven't seen it in a long time. All right, Colin, Marcus, what else you got before we wrap this thing up?
More Marty also, when they're talking to you. What was that guy at the gas station?
Mordecai? Yeah.
He's like, I've been here since the war. Which war? And Marty's like,
you know which one.
The one with the blue and the gray?
You sassing me, boy?
Where was this supposed to take place? I'm wondering, because the gas station, there was like a big, rebel flag.
I didn't know.
I was assuming it was supposed to be somewhere in the South, which is vague, but that's...
It's quite vague.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was in Vancouver, because that's where they filmed it.
Yeah.
It looked a lot like Vancouver.
Rumble in Vancouver.
Everything.
All right. Well, and then I think we can move to our final wrap-up. So, Colin, when you first, what's your letter grade, and would you recommend people watch this, and why?
I think if you're a fan of horror films, and you like to laugh, then you should watch this, because you'll get it. If you're not, I think you might be a little lost.
Why are you listening to this podcast?
So it's a really good movie. I think you should definitely watch it. You'll be highly entertained. And I'm going to give it a B+, A-.
No, you have to choose.
I choose Sexy Witches.
Okay. How about you, Marcus?
I'm with Colin. I would say the same thing. It's a good horror movie. It is not that scary, not too gross till the very end. And it's not even that gross because it's so over the top. It actually ends up being funny, enjoyable, fun. If you aren't interested in horror, I think it's an easy horror movie to watch because it's not too scary. And it's just kind of poke. It's not really poking fun at horror movies because it kind of...
Oh, I think it's poking fun at horror movies.
It's totally poking fun at horror movies.
I don't think it's as poking fun. It's like it's embracing them in a way. It's not like
it's doing both. It's like sort of celebrating what we love about horror movies, but also at the same time taking them to task for certain things, like a lot of the tropes, like the jock, the whore, the fool.
Yeah,
a lot of that shit, and they do it really well.
Definitely worth watching. I'd probably give it a B+. It's fun, it's good, but there's a lot better horror movies out there, so it's hard to depends how you stack rank them or just say, hey, it's a good, fun movie.
Are we going to actually do like a horror movie? I feel like the ones that we have done so far have all had
a little bit of
comedy.
I'm picking them thinking that they're going to be, and they're not.
You know, there's a lot of black comedy in horror movies in general, right? I mean, if you look for it.
Dave, what's your wrap, and then we can talk about next one if you
want. Love this movie from a creativity standpoint, right? I just think that it's ultra creative, and so I think the script is really smart. The dialogue is really funny. I think the performances are good, and you see, for example, seeing a younger Chris Hemsworth, like you say, it's like he just kind of like you see lots of charisma there, and like, oh yeah, this guy's going to be a star, no problem. I think if you are somebody who grew up watching a lot of horror or you just like horror movies in general, this movie really pays off for you because I think it's really funny. If you are looking for a horror movie, this is probably not that because it ends up being more of a... This is, to me, if you want to say, what's horror versus what's comedy, this is 70% comedy, 30% horror. Maybe that's kind of how I would split it. So yeah. I think
it's kind of like a Scream almost. Like it's very similar in that kind of vein of like...
Scream is a lot more serious than this one ultimately though, as a comparison.
Yeah.
So from a letter grade, I would give this an A-. I think it's very smart. So Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford, I think, are just fantastic, right? The dialogue and the banter between those two, that makes a movie right there. So, and the rest of it is just gravy. And then the end sequence with all the creatures is just amazingly fun because it plays right into like all the... So one is it's just fun to see all those individual creatures, but then this whole idea that they're just running crazy and you're having like an active gunfight. It becomes an action movie at that point, right? But it's... For a few minutes, it's tons of fun, and I'll just say the ending has legitimate balls. Like how they wrap this movie up it's an interesting choice at the end. Yeah, strong recommendation for me. Had a great time with this. It was fun to watch it again after not seeing it for a long time.
All right.
Yeah.
Good one.
All right. Well, hope you enjoyed our conversation about The Cabin in the Woods. We've all learned that we will not go to a cabin in the woods. So if you guys are anybody out there, we can say good luck to you. And otherwise, this is the Real DMC Podcast, Friday Night Frights Edition, signing off.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye. I'm going to go hang with some sexy witches now.
Mordecai, baby, what's happening? How's the weather up top?
The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
Well, you're doing a great job out there.
By the numbers, man, you got to start it off just right. So we'll talk to you later, okay?
Their blind eyes see nothing of the horrors to come. Their ears are stopped.
They are the gods' fools.
Well, that's how it works.
Cleanse them. Cleanse the world of their ignorance and sin. Bathe them in the crimson of... Am I on speakerphone?
No, absolutely not. Speakerphone, no. No, I wouldn't do that.
Yes, I am. I can hear the echo.
Oh, my God. You're right. Hang on one second. I'll take you off.
That's rude. I don't know who's in the room.
Fine. There. You're off.
Thank you. Don't take this lightly, boy. It wasn't all by your numbers. The fool nearly derailed the invocation with his insolence. The ancient ones see everything, and they will not be... I'm still on speakerphone, aren't I?
Oh, my God, Mordecai! I can't believe it. It did it again.
Morty?